Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American Dynamite is a powerhouse vocalist, electrifying drummer, skilled songwriter, and Ivy League graduate. Ready to launch her most defining chapter yet, her upcoming debut album, produced by Grammy winner Damon Sharp, features a top-tier roster of musicians with credits alongside Ray, Teddy Swims, and Pharrell. Boston-raised and now LA-based, Dynamite has lived a life on stage since childhood. From age 8 to 18, she toured the country as half of the sibling duo Michael and Marissa, performing over 350-plus shows, including opening for Ariana Grande, Christina Perry, Cody Simpson, and more. Her solo single, Show Me You, has since surpassed 2 million Spotify streams and was featured in Dar Man episode that's racked up over 10 million views. Blending classic R&B, sultry neo-soul, and infectious pop hooks, Dynamite pairs raw emotive vocals with sharp introspective lyrics inspired by her studies in sociology at Brown University. A proud member of the LGBTQ+ community, a national spokesperson for the anti-bullying organization PACER, and a second-degree black belt, she embodies empowerment both on and off stage. With retro-inspired style, a fearless creative vision, and the rare ability to command the spotlight while singing and drumming simultaneously, Dynamite is not just releasing an album, she's building a career that's as bold, layered, and dynamic as her name. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Dynamite. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Oh, I'm in Los Angeles, and I am doing great. Yeah, I'm excited. Thank you so much for this opportunity, for having me, and looking forward to chatting with you.
Why, how, and where was the stage name Dynamite chosen, and also the spelling?
I was nicknamed it in a recording studio when I was little, since I've been doing music professionally since I was around 8. So around when I was a preteen, I guess I got that nickname, just because I'm very tiny. I'm like barely 5 feet. I say 5 feet, but I don't quite know. But yeah, so I was always really tiny, but I played the drums and have a lot of energy. So it just kind of became my nickname. And then, I don't know, it was someone in a recording studio gave me that nickname and they were like, but I feel like you can spell it with a Y to make it like edgy and cool. And then like little me was like, okay, that sounds cool. And then, yeah, I guess it's a typical thing when you're in a recording studio to have like different nicknames for each other. So yeah, I don't know. I liked the nickname and then it just kind of stuck.
Let's unpack your journey. At what age did you actually think, okay, I want to do this? And how did that journey progress to where we are today?
I guess I was 8. So my brother is a music prodigy. He's younger than me. And he started performing like professionally when he was 6 and was just like shredding on the guitar and singing. And it was like a crazy thing to witness. And at the time, I had started the violin when he started the guitar. And it was just not for me. I'm not a slow-paced, precise. I liked like big, fast movements. So it was just not my cup of tea. So then, yeah, I remember asking my mom and I was so scared. I was like, I'm asking to quit something that I started and then I want to ask to play the drums. But she said yes. And then I was so excited because the drums, you really start hitting them on the first lesson, where the violin, like you can't touch it for like the first year. You just do like technique or something.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
An 8-year-old me was like, I'm not waiting a year. A year feels like a lifetime. You're little. Like, so yeah, the drums were great because I could just start on them kind of right away. Yeah, I would get to jam with my brother, which was great because in our basement, we're from Boston, so there are basements in Boston. Yes. Out here. But that's kind of where you practice and play music. So, you know, we would just start jamming together and then it just really grew from there because he was already gigging and then he kind of added me in as like I did harmonies and drums, just playing like local festivals and that sort of thing. And then someone saw the two of us playing together and wanted to be our booking agent. And we were like, oh, our parents were like, oh, okay, like, well, sure. They seem to love this and they're good at it. Like, okay. And then we were booking around locally. And then someone in New York saw us from like a management company and wanted to manage us. And then it just kind of grew from there. And we were on national tours and doing all that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's just really lucky how it all unfolded. I'm really grateful. I also just being around a brother that's like a prodigy was huge for me because it, you know, just inspired me so much. It became like our language. How we would hang out would be music and different things kind of in that same world. So, yeah.
How long were you guys touring together?
I would say about a decade. Like we started when we were 7 and 8, and then I did it all the way till college. So when I was 18. So yeah, exactly 10 years.
And then did you create your own music, original music?
Yeah, it was all original music. It's so funny. Like I wrote my first song when I was 9, I guess. Yeah, we were little. It started as covers. So like what was cute is it was like we would be hired for events because it was really funny because I guess we were really good for being so little. And my brother too, like just shredding the guitar, and it was bigger than him. And we would be harmonizing, and it was just cute, like because we probably sounded like Alvin and the Chipmunks, but we would sing all these like classic rock songs that people knew from like way before we were born at the time. So it was just kind of funny for people. And then over time, we started making original music also, so our audience became more people that were our age or teens and kids and that sort of thing too, because it started really as like we were performing for adults as like this really funny thing.
It gained momentum quite quickly in the sense that you were performing sort of in your local area, and the next thing you are national tours supporting all these various artists, Ariana Grande, Nickelodeon, all these Cody Simpsons and that. Because it happened quite quickly, was there any surprise in your mind? It was like, oh, you know, that imposter syndrome or that thing of like, oh, is this really happening? Or did you just think, okay, well, it's just the next steps?
It's so funny because at the time, like looking back, I think the whole thing's like wild to reflect on. But when you're in it, it just sort of seemed like the next natural step. We would do 50 shows a year, half in the summer, half during the school year, because we did school regular, like full time. We didn't do homeschooling or anything like that. So it just kind of seemed like what we do in the summer is like we're on a tour and we do this sort of thing. And then every year it would get kind of bigger because sometimes like the tour manager from the last thing is now working with this next artist. How we got Ariana was we toured with this band named Rixton the summer before, and they were managed by Scooter Braun at the time. And so we were their opener. It started, we were just the local opener, like so for the whole East Coast wing. And then they liked us and they asked us to do the full tour for Rixton. So we did that. And then, you know, we went back to school, didn't think anything of it. And then I remember it was like early in the summertime and we were at Cheesecake Factory with our little cousin. And my brother was like, oh, my phone's ringing. And we were kind of like, I don't know. He knew he had to like listen for a call soon, but we didn't really know what for. And then he came back to the table and was like, just telling us. And we were like, what? So that was really crazy. But it also made sense. He was like, I guess the person that they needed dropped out or something happened where it was pretty last minute too. Like they were like, we need this right away. And they just thought of us because we did the tour before and he was managing Ariana at the time. And you know, he knew we were reliable and did well. So then, yeah, we got that opportunity. And yeah, because it was a decade, it felt like every year it just was like up the next step. So I never really felt imposter syndrome then. Now looking back, I just kind of think how it's wild. I'm like, oh, I don't think I grasped the gravity of what I was doing. I was just like, oh, this is so cool. This is fun. But I wasn't like, this is crazy. Like it just seemed so normal at the time. But looking back now, I'm like, wow, that was really quite the experience. That was really, you know, something a lot of people don't get to experience. I think also to us, some people do soccer, some people do dance. And to us, we did music. And it was just like our thing that we did. And we didn't get that that's different from what anyone else was doing. We were like, oh, kids go to school and then they have like their thing that they're good at that they love. And so we just kind of thought of it like that. And in the summer, some people go to camp, we go on tour. Like we didn't see if it was any different at all.
Which is cool because I think that gives you that grounding. It keeps you sensing in a sense like, oh, I'm this person, I'm doing this. When the fact that, oh, I'm just going on a tour. You enjoy camp, you enjoy soccer. We'll see you in a few weeks. What's your brother doing currently? You went to varsity, you're doing your solo thing. What's your brother doing?
So we started doing our solo projects because he went to Berklee College of Music and I went to Brown. So I'm like the nerdy sibling. So I just took the 4 years to do academics and wasn't really doing music. And he studied music for all of college because, again, he's like this prodigy. So it makes sense. Then after we graduated, he had already been putting his own music out since college, like the whole time, just under his own artist name. And then we both moved to LA together post-COVID. And we don't live together, but he's in West Hollywood. I'm in Santa Monica. He produced my first solo single. Like, we work together a lot. I'm going to sing on one of his songs soon. So yeah, we're always like collaborating and doing that sort of thing. I think it's when you're siblings, you become a little bit like, it's almost a compromise because I would like certain kinds of music. He would like certain kinds of music. And then we would meet in the middle where he's like a pop production expert. Like, that's his whole world. He can name the names of all the sounds and instruments that were used in every pop track from like however many years. He's like an expert, like a savant, like really gifted in that world. And so I always liked like live instrumentation and less electronic noises and more like throwbacky sounds. So it just got to a point where as we grew into ourselves, we liked different things. And so we still support each other in that. But yeah, he's releasing music, working with huge artists, because he produces for other artists. And then he also does his own music. And yeah, right now he's in New York. He was the headliner for the like Lady Gaga Mayhem ball celebration thing in New York. So he was so excited about that. He's a huge Lady Gaga fan. So he's there right now doing a bunch of shows. And yeah, it's just really cool. We go to each other's performances all the time. And it's just great that, you know, we're able to support each other and be there. Because it's, our music journey has always been us together. So it's still that. We're just doing our own thing, but supporting each other at the same time.
How do you create a song?
Ooh, that's a good question. Thinking to how I first started creating songs, I was nine again, and I wrote my first song. But what inspired me at the time, which is funny because it's so serious for a nine-year-old, but I was like, wow, the people on the radio, everyone listens to what they say, but they're not really saying anything important. They're like, party, party, yay, blah, blah, blah. And nine-year-old me had a problem with that. I was like, if they're not taking, you know, making the most of their opportunity. And then my first song I ever wrote was about the environment, and I was nine. Yeah, I just always had a thing where I'm like, wow, they can say anything they want to be in the ears of every person. Like, I felt so inspired to write things that would like shape culture and make an impact. So yeah, it's always kind of been that way for me. It's always been like a huge moment for us as a duo was we did this anti-bullying song when we were like, I don't know, maybe 12 and 13 or maybe younger. It became embedded in like the national public school curriculum, and we would travel to all the schools and perform the song. And you know, it was featured a lot as like, oh, these kids are, you know, trying to speak up about bullying in a way that's kids to other kids rather than like teachers lecturing kids. So yeah, that was really powerful to see from a really young age how our song impacted all those kids. And they would come up to us after shows, and we would also talk to them, like go in their classrooms and do like different anti-bullying workshops around the song or going through the lyrics. And then their choruses would perform it for us. And so seeing like the power that lyrics could hold alone. Michael was always like the music side of writing. I was always the lyric side of writing. Like, that was always my go-to. I don't know, just every day throughout the day, I like will write bullet points or notes of things that I feel inspired to like talk about or say something about. I think with this new album, there are a lot of topics I haven't talked about yet that are maybe heavier than what I would have talked about when I was younger. And, you know, looking to make an impact through talking about those things. And also, I think, you know, when a song of mine isn't talking about some deep grand thing, it's often like an empowering type of song, especially for young women. I think that's so important to, you know, like be assertive and be confident in who you are and stand up for yourself. So they're definitely like, Checkmate is definitely one of those. I'm like, oh, you thought that I was just going to be played, but no, like I am smart and I like, you're not going to pull one over on me. So I think it's like a good balance between all of those things. Yeah, I think like in everything I do, it's the goal is to like empower other people. Also studying sociology was about, for me, it really inspired my lyrics. It was studying human behavior and in the overall system of human behavior rather than like individual psychology and how, you know, we can shape culture and impact people and where those gaps are. So I think that also made a huge impact on my writing.
And why did you choose Checkmate as the first single?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it's just like a fun, upbeat one. It's empowering and confident. It's not like too different from anything I've released before. Like the early Dynamite stuff also was like very focused on empowering messages. So I think it's sort of in that same vein. It's like a nice, upbeat, good vibe track. I think over time we'll get into the like deeper ones, but we didn't want to start right off the bat with those ones because it's like, oh, she hasn't released music in a couple years and now she's just like releasing, you know, more complicated subjects. I just felt like Checkmate's a perfect balance of, you know, having that confidence level and standing up for yourself, which I think is super important, while still like having fun with it.
You referenced it was a couple of years between releasing. Why did you take that break?
So I toured with the last music I put out for a while. So I did a 26-city tour. And so that was like over the course of like, I guess a year after I released that music. And then after that, the past year has been in the studio making this album. I don't know. The time just flies. I was on tour and then I was making the album. And then now it's time already to put it out, which is exciting. And then it'll be time to tour that album. Yeah, it's fun. Like a fun part of being an artist is like the different life cycles of it. There are all these different stages. And, you know, people get to experience like the live performance part, which I think is a very different medium than just like recording something in the studio, because it's like a different level of connection. And you actually get to see like the audience face to face and have that shared experience together. So I'm definitely really excited to tour with this album once more songs are out and everything. But yeah, so I don't know. I guess it's just I was busy doing the last music still and then creating this music and this album. I definitely didn't want to rush it. I wanted to, we wrote it pretty quickly, but as far as like getting the production exactly how we wanted, I was a little fussy in wanting all live musicians, which Damon is amazing. He's the Grammy winning producer that I am so grateful to have worked with and continue to work with. And it's a unusual thing in this day and age to have live musicians record a whole project. Now a lot of things just for simplicity's sake and also for the ease of like lining everything up on a grid when you're editing is done digitally, and you can, you know, make a lot of instruments with synthesizers and different things that can sound like drums and can sound like horns and all these different things. But this project, which Damon totally saw the vision right from the outset, but I was like, I really want this to be like a live thing with live horns, and we have live strings in there. Like, just all I don't know, everything I've ever dreamed of. And I think I always gravitate toward music like that, and it's just always been a dream of mine to, you know, make music in that same realm. I think it's a little bit of a lost art. I think it's fading away. I don't know. I think there are pros and cons to that. I think it makes making music so much more accessible to so many people because you don't need like a 10-piece band to like recording an album. But yeah, I think that's why, you know, this project, we really took our time with it and we didn't want to cut any corners. We really wanted to record live musicians and the whole, you know, thing that we were picturing. So yeah, we really perfected it to how we envisioned, and I'm really grateful for that. Yeah.
Well, Damon is a friend of the podcast. He's been a guest and he's a friend of mine. So shout out to Damon. How's it?
Yeah.
I love that you're releasing an album, because I speak to so many artists these days and it's about the single. It's about the EP and the album's not that it's no longer relevant, but it's like, I want to focus more on those other elements. What would for you was the motivation and inspiration to say, no, I'm going to do an album?
I think I've always just been an album girl, like as a consumer. I feel like the artists I've connected to the most, or even how I like look over the years of my life, I have like certain albums tied to those eras in my brain. I just love a body of work. I think it shows like versatility in different sides of a person. And you feel like you get to learn all different sides of them. It tells a story versus just one song. And then you're like, okay, this is a vibe, but you don't get the full picture of like where they are and their journey and what they're trying to say overall. Where like when you have a bunch of songs and you string them all together, it really tells a story of who you are. And I think part of being a consumer in general for music is wanting to feel close to the artist and like you know them on a deeper level. And that's when you like really connect and you want to go to all their shows and you just feel so in awe of the person that they are in addition to the music that they make. And I think For me, albums have always been that way to like get that experience. I think, I don't know, in general with these algorithms and stuff, it's good to like tease a few singles first and then drop more music. So as much as I was like, let's just drop the whole thing right now as an album, I guess you have to still do some singles and get the ball rolling with that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm just excited to put out so many different songs to show so many different sides of myself and to give people like a better picture of who I am.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an
I love
energy
that.
exchange. To you guys, for all the hard work that you do, for me, it's a journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, listening to song from one to whatever number.
Oh,
I'm not
totally.
sure, I'm sure you are or may not be aware, and a massive uptick of physical around the world. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Also, last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on these exchanges, they monitor it for tax purposes. There needs to be a high number of exchanges every day for a product to be in the basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. The research is showing that it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this
Love
world,
that.
not the older, in inverted commas, nostalgic people. Then we have streaming, as we've referenced earlier. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I think that's a great question. I think, again, it's kind of pros and cons. So I was born in the late 90s, so I grew up with cassettes and then CDs and carrying around like a whole booklet and a little CD. I had a Hello Kitty CD player and I would bring it with me with little headphones. So funny because I get shy about sharing my music taste sometimes, like to people that I care about. And I think it's because in that era, CDs were basically saying who you are. Like if you were with your friends or socializing, it would be like, what CDs do you have? And you would look through the booklet, and that was your whole music library. Like there wasn't, oh, let me go and check out these other things. And you would line up at Walmart at 6 a.m. or whatever to try to get the new album and invite friends over to listen to it because you got it and they haven't heard it yet. And it was like your booklet of CDs was everything about your identity and what speaks to you. And I think, I guess you could say a Spotify library is a little like that, but it's just now such a world where it feels infinite. I feel like the amount of songs on Spotify, I could just listen to a new song every day, all day for the rest of my life, all the time, and still not even put a dent. Where before, it was like you knew your catalog really, really well of the songs that you knew all the words, studied the booklets in and out. And it was just, I think, a different level of appreciation. Now I think there's also people burn through things much faster. I think just with social media in general, we're used to like constantly getting fed new content. So before it's like, I don't know, you'd have your CDs and you would just run those ragged. Like it was for your CDs, you would just play them over and over and over and over. And now it's kind of like, yeah, you can listen to singles or listen to a thing and then be like, okay, I'm over it. Let's see what else is out there. And just with the click of your thumb, you have access to all other music. So I notice it's good on the one hand because I think people are exploring different genres and artists that they wouldn't otherwise. But then I think on the other hand, there are less like diehard loyal artists. There still are, but I think, it used to be like, I just remember having Lily Allen CDs, and I listened to those CDs every single day for years. Like, it was just like every day on the way to school, on the way home, when I'd be doing my homework, when before bed, I would just like have my little CD and my thing, and I'd be looking at the booklet every day. Like, the book was not changing, but I just look at it. Yeah, it was just a different level of almost like worshiping the art form and understanding it. Where now I don't even think people take the time to look at the lyrics all the time. I think it's just like, oh, you have to search it up and it's just not always something people are interested in. I think overall there are definitely pros and cons. I think I check out music that I wouldn't have purchased the CD for without having listened to a few songs first. So there's a lot of growth in that way, which is cool. But I also think it's important to like take the time to really sit with a body of work and not just be like, okay, now what? Next, and like scroll through and be over it. Yeah.
So you referenced earlier some of the aspects of what you love about performing live. What are the other elements? And you perform while you're playing the drums at the same time. You've obviously been doing that for a long time. So how does that all the make logistics around that work? And what else do you enjoy about performing live?
It's so funny because people always ask me, because I guess singing and drumming is unusual, which never really occurred to me. It also, when I was younger, didn't occur to me that like being a girl and drumming was unusual at all. These things were just all sort of normal to me. So I've been singing and drumming since I was 8, and haven't really thought of any other way. I don't know. It's always been together. I've always had like a boom microphone in front, and I drum and I sing, and it just feels so natural to me. If anything, it's almost more comfy. It's like, because I'm busy with my body and then I'm also singing, and I just feel like I'm all aspects of me are like being the music, which is so cool. Where, yeah, I remember at first when I don't know, when, yeah, I guess when I was like an early preteen, early teenager, when, you know, the audience a lot of times would want me to come out front because I'm a small girl and I'd be behind a giant drum set and you'd see my head. Like people would be like, we want to, you know, see her come up front. And I remember it feeling so funny at first to be like, I just stand here and sing and walk around. Like I don't have to do anything else. Like it's so, I just would want something to do with my hands. It felt so funny. But now I feel so comfortable with it. But yeah, I think something that was cool when I performed with my brother is his main instrument was guitar, mine was drums, and we both would sing. But then once we got older, we would play a bunch of different instruments. And then every song we would switch to a different instrument. So it was like you didn't know where to look next. Like then I would be playing the bass or the keys or the ukulele, and he would be doing the same. Like we would just keep trading off. I don't know. It was really engaging to watch and exciting. So I try to channel that a little bit in my own shows. Like the drums obviously will always be my favorite thing. I would say I do about like half the songs on the drums, and then the other half where I come out front and either like play other instruments like bass or guitar or keys or just something else. Or sometimes I just like walk around and connect with the audience. And yeah, it's really interesting to experience playing so many different instruments because you do connect with the audience differently depending on the instrument you're playing. Like say a keyboard or drums are more limiting, where like a guitar or bass, you can like walk all around and do your whole thing. So yeah, I've always found that fascinating. But I also am lucky to have never had stage fright. I think just it's again like when you do things when you're kind of like when people learn a language when they're little and it just like is so ingrained in them. It feels like that with both drumming and singing and with being on stage, where I really don't know anything else. So it's normal to me to connect with other people in that way. Yeah, I just get so much joy out of it because you make music and you know people are listening and they comment sometimes online and say what they like, but there's nothing quite like singing a song and seeing people reacting to it in real time. Or I love like explaining the backstories before I perform and watching people's reactions and laughing or being like, oh yeah, I know about that experience too. Like I've had the same thing happen to me. And it's just such like a bonding experience with everyone in that room. So yeah, I don't know. It's hard because I'm like, which do I enjoy more, being in the studio or performing live? I just love both things so much and I'm so grateful to be able to do both. And I'm really excited to do it with these new songs.
So you originally started with the drums. At what age or what point did you start learning or picking up the other instruments?
Maybe when I was around 10 or so, I guess I would want to write songs myself, just as like my own diary or creative outlet. Like when we would work together, my brother and I would be doing like the professional songs, but sometimes I would just want to write a song myself just to get a feeling out. And the drums aren't like musical, they're just rhythmic. So there aren't any notes. You can't really write a song on them. So I started with like playing around with the keys, and that was like the first musical instrument that, you know, I would play and sing and be able to write on, which was amazing. Yeah, I don't know. I think being a drummer, the bass is kind of like it's rhythmic too. So
Okay.
for wanting to be out front, that was like a natural inclination to then like, you know, rhythmically be playing while singing. And then ukulele, I don't know, since I was younger, would always toy around with it. Because it's just easy to bring with you and play and it's pretty straightforward. And then yeah, guitar, I would say when I was a teenager, I started learning some guitar, and I just felt like my writing would be different on guitar than keyboard. Like the songs I would write would come out differently in different styles of music. So yeah, they all kind of just had their purpose. And over the years, it's like I always just want to learn new things, I guess, and new outlets to express, you know, what I'm trying to say. I feel like, yeah, they feel like a language, I guess. It feels like, you know, having another language in your back pocket to get out the music inside that you want to share with everyone else. So yeah.
So what's coming up next? We know the singles, there's the album. I know it's a lot secretive in your world, so what can you tell us?
Oh, that's fun. Well, we're definitely going to do a couple more singles before dropping like all the songs. So they're going to be like every 4 weeks. So there's already one coming out in like 3.5 weeks, which will be fun. And then we've done a ton of video content for songs coming up too. So that'll be really fun with like a full live band in a studio, which was really thrilling. It was like maybe an 8-piece band and horns and the whole nine yards. So we captured, I think we did 5 songs with like a studio session like that, where, you know, there's just a visual of what it is all together, every musician that was on the song. So I'm really thrilled about that. And then hopefully too, like shows soon. I think once a few more songs are out, I'll start performing probably first locally, like in the LA area. And then, you know, I'd love to be on a tour again and do that sort of thing, just because it's, I don't know, just so home to me. Same, my dog went on the entire last tour with me. It's so funny. She went to all 26 cities. She had her ear protection on. She's like such a tour dog. So I joke every time I go to the airport and land that she's like, oh, we're not performing tonight. We're just going to visit so-and-so. Like, cause she's so used to like, okay, like, what are we doing? Where's the action? So yeah. But, and she usually makes a cameo when I tour. So I'm sure she'll do the same thing again, where, you know, I bring her out for like a song or something, and she gets mad if I don't. She'll like give me the cold shoulder the rest of the night. So yeah, I don't know. I think those are some definite things to look forward to. And yeah, I'm just excited to see, you know, where this new music takes me and how people receive it and enjoy it. And yeah.
I love this game. Just top of mind, no reasoning. I know if I had to ask you this question tomorrow, the next day, or the next day, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. Okay. Like I said, not favorite. If you had to push play to 5 other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those 5 artists be?
Amy Winehouse, Lily Allen, Ray, Georgia Smith, and Bruno Mars.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say to the audience?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't know. Something I've learned as an artist over time is you're not doing it right if you don't feel a little nervous about what you're saying, I think, which I, you know, used to play it safer when, especially when I was first doing my solo project, I would not talk about things that would make me a little uncomfortable, that were a little deeper. I think Ray is really good at doing that. Lily Allen's really good. There's so many artists that are just so good at doing that. And I do connect with those the most. So with this new project, I definitely pushed myself to talk about things that I hadn't talked about. And yeah, I just remember seeing a quote somewhere that was like, you're not making art to your fullest potential if you don't feel a little uneasy about like how people are going to interpret it or take it. Otherwise, it's too safe. So I think it's really important. Like if you're an artist out there, you don't have to like go way out of your comfort zone, but it's good to like push yourself a little bit to expand a little beyond your comfort zone, because I do think it made some of the best songs I've ever made. And I'm really grateful for that and excited for the world to hear them and to talk about them. And yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.